Welcome back to the Rural Roundup, hosted by me, Kerry Hammond. This show is produced in association with the Scottish Government. This episode is part of a spotlight mini-series titled Trees of the Gaelic World. This mini-series, hosted by Jeanette Sutherland, a senior consultant for SAC Consulting in Portree, will feature four episodes, each looking at a species of tree. The episodes will look at the Gaelic language and lore surrounding the species, and advice from the Woodland Trust on the best conditions and how to manage or establish that tree on our land in the current day. Bringing us the language and lore is Dr. Michael Newton, a scholar in the States with extensive knowledge on Gaelic folklore. Our advice and technical information comes from the following advisors from the Woodland Trust. Viv Halcrow tells us all about birch. Iona Hyde tells us about yew. Alistair Firth tells us about oak. And Alan Crawford is here to tell us about Scots pine. I'll hand over to Jeanette Sutherland now for this episode's tree.
This episode is about oak. If you are inspired to grow this tree on your croft, please see the show notes for further advice. Remember, the Gaelic world is much smaller than when the first alphabet was created, so please check each species' geographic range.
Trees of the Gaelic World, Cruven Sil nan Gael. I'm going to start out by looking at the oak tree, which is called Darach in modern Scottish Gaelic. The presence of this tree is attested in the Gaelic names of places around Scotland. To give just a few examples, Fasan Darach near Dennet, Aberdeenshire, means oak station. Camas Darach near Addisac means oak bay. Tor Garach in Strathnairn means Hill of Oaks. I introduced the Ogham alphabet in the previous episode. Gaels invented the Ogham alphabet no later than the 4th century AD, inspired by the Latin alphabet but refashioned on the model of trees. Every letter has a Gaelic name and many of them are trees. The letter D in the Ogham alphabet is assigned to the Gaelic name for the oak, Darach. I also mentioned in the previous episode that the Druids of the ancient Celtic world seemed to have a special relationship to the oak tree, at least on the European continent, according to the ancient Greek and Latin writers. While not all modern scholars agree on the origin of the name of the Druids, some, at least, believe that the name means knower of the oak. We know that trees were features of sacred sites in the ancient Celtic world, and that they were sometimes incorporated into early Christian foundations. Celts on the European continent used the word nemeton for their holy sanctuaries, where the Druids gathered for worship. Some aspect of their sanctity lingered on for a long time, for in Gaul in the 740s, the natives were said to conduct pagan practices in sacred woods that were called nemedis, a word clearly derived from the ancient Celtic nemeton. This word developed in early medieval Gaelic as nevid, which had the general meaning of sacred or noble, and the more specific meaning of a holy place. A medieval Irish scribe glossed the word with the Latin term saculum, suggesting a shrine or enclosure. An old Irish law tract forbade the cutting of fiag nevid, sacred woods, which could be found in some early Christian sites. St. Columba established the church at Derry, which means oakwood, Dorthe. Similarly, the center of devotion to St. Bridget is at Kildare, Kildara, meaning oak church. There are over a dozen place names in Scotland that incorporate the element nevid as nieve or nievi, one of which is very close to the amazing yew tree of Fortingall in Perthshire. There is an interesting candidate for a sacred oak and slate on the Isle of Skye called Furivor, which was said to provide shelter for 40 or 50 head of cattle. The Gaelic term for an individual tree that is sacred is bille, and there are numerous examples of these in the Highlands, although I'm not aware of any that were oaks. St. Columba was said to have preached in the shade of a massive yew tree on the island of Bernera, off the southwest end of Lismore. The yew tree could shelter 1,000 people, and was such an important landmark that it is featured in a Gaelic rhyme about the places of Lorne. The original Gaelic is Dún stúag stahanish ertuv tua laharna, is bjarnara an yuid uasal ertuv tua lismode. In English, the mighty Dunstafnich on the north side of Lorne and Bernera of the noble yew tree on the north side of Lismore. St. Columba prophesied that the pride and greed of man would cause the downfall of the tree, but that the Vandals would suffer a threefold death. There can be little doubt that Bernera's yew tree was sacred well before Columba's time. The bille is sometimes found in association with a holy well, and here too, one of the best examples features a yew tree. This is Topir en Yuid, the well of the yew. Here again, however, some hooligan damaged the holy tree, and a Gaelic rhyme tells us that there was a special place reserved in hell for him. Topir en Yuid, Topir en Yuid, san gulta bechor a vi uasal, ha lepi jes ananifrin, donier a yar a chruv mat a chluasan. Well of the yew, well of the yew, it is to you that it is proper to act nobly. There is a bed ready in hell for the man who cut the tree about your ears. That's pretty harsh invective, and it makes most sense if Gaelic tradition considers these trees to be inherently sacrosanct. This attitude is corroborated by writers such as Martin Martin, who wrote of the holy well at Loch Sheanthan Skye, quote, "There is a small coppice near to the well, and there is none of the natives venture to cut the least branch of it, for fear of some signal judgment to fall upon it," unquote. So what does all of this tell us about Gaelic beliefs and cosmology? What is at the root of these practices, ideas, and rituals? The most logical interpretation of this evidence is that Gaels understood individual sacred trees as manifestations of the archetype of the world tree or tree of life. Anthropologists confirm that this is a universal archetype representing the energies of the living cosmos circulated through a tree that connects the underworld to the heavens, passing through our realm and endowing us with its favor, so long as we enact the rituals needed to maintain it and do not violate its integrity. There are numerous medieval Gaelic texts that give us striking visions of the world tree, but there are several in modern vernacular Scottish Gaelic as well. One of the most detailed and fascinating of these was composed by Reverend James McLagan, a native of Perthshire who was an accomplished Gaelic poet and antiquarian. In a song he composed to incite troops sent to fight in the Seven Years' War, he reassures his audience that victory will usher in peace and prosperity as expressed in tree imagery. This is just one stanza from a longer poem. En chin gavi cruv na shi le freiv, chaun graim gen doina halving. E shini gagan gruig nev, gach ars le sheves is galvla. Be keller aving ein na menglen, is dainya lang cloing a shalavahug. Torag is sehir and lav gun veim, fo gur cave a jarav skal. Then the roots of the tree of peace will take a firm hold of the earth's depths, and its branches will stretch to heaven, delicate fruits and white blossoms in every direction. The merry music of birds in its branches, families taking residence, the produce of their labor unfailing under its soft shadow. This symbolism of the world tree and tree of life informed religious Gaelic song poetry of the late 18th and early 19th century Highlands. Consider the song Clue of Enging, The Renown of the Branch, composed by Margaret Cameron of Rannoch in about the year 1800. Here are two of its 10 stanzas in the original Gaelic, followed by my translation into English. Vovaun yesi vrishjamach amfalian gasta ur, fir chraun uanya turta luachvod, se adi clue. Mengen uasol torach buagvod, se gach ur fogruch, a jegen dosroch shincha suas, siet tarink uaya sui. Crown ro hachnach a school ro arsing, a mach o chuan kokuan. San foscala yor faskag, tachnach doloch kuorst. Ha arste ruyach chun yev, sar yev na yev avuai, ha avasha is adyach a torst bar, it gach crown a gas is suas. From Jesse's trunk appeared the fine young sprout, the precious green chosen true branch. He deserves praise. A noble, fertile, triumphant branch, forever succulent, his leafy branches stretched upwards, drawing moisture from them. A very pleasing branch which has spread widely outwards from sea to sea. It is under his shade that shelter is found. Pleasing shelter for travellers. His height reaches to the heavens, and his virtue excels the heaven of heavens. His beauty excels every tree that grows upward. This is an exquisite song of praise to Jesus Christ that draws deeply from the wells of tradition. It is compelling to a Gaelic audience exactly because it is utilizing the archetype of the tree of life. And it is perhaps ironic that these Christian composers are exploiting imagery that is far older and deeper than Christianity itself in order to promote it. But that is the nature of tradition, always drawing power from symbols in the wells of the unconscious to nurture the seeds that are planted anew each season that in turn feed us.
How many types of oak grow in Scotland?
So that sounds like a simple question, but it's not really. There are two native species of oak, which is pedunculate oak and sessile oak, and they are both native to continental Europe and to the UK. There's a few other introduced species of oak. You've got American oaks and some evergreen oaks like home oak, and they grow fairly well in the UK. But when you actually try and define the species of oak that you have in your local woodland, it becomes a bit more difficult. There's a lot of overlap in the genetics between pedunculate oak and sessile oak, and they hybridize really readily. In fact, all of the white oaks, which these are types of, hybridize kind of at random. So what you get is a whole degree, a swarm of different genetic species, and it kind of, the genes that are expressed most readily are the ones which are kind of giving local adaptations. So in the west of Scotland, you get things that look like sessile oak because they're adapted to the local conditions. So they have those particular characteristics, which are like a short stem for the acorns, but a long stem for the leaves. And peduncle oak have kind of little ears at the bases of the leaves, which you also find on most oaks in the west of Scotland. So they may have a long stem, which would indicate a sessile oak, but ears, auricles, on the bases of the leaves, which would indicate pedunculate oak. So you get characteristics of both of the species on the same tree. And sometimes you get some leaves on the tree which are one, some other leaves which are the other species, so you can't really tell which species the tree itself is.
That's fascinating. So when you think of your like Introduction to Trees books, the IDs, like the species, there's a whole raft of complexity in the middle.
Actually, oak is a really good example of how much of a human construct this species is, because they hybridize so much. So oaks and willows are both of those kind of species. There's everything in between the textbook definitions of the species, because they're basically wind pollinated. The pollen just flies on the air, and so any oak tree can pick up the pollen from any other oak tree. And that means that if you've got two of the kind of the type, if you had the two type specimens growing next to each other, they would hybridize because they're in flower at the same time. And then the descendants of those trees would be, to some extent, hybrids of the two, but maybe look more like one than the other. And the local conditions kind of dictate which genes are expressed, because as it grows up as a seedling, it may find itself growing in a rocky place, so it takes on the ones that survive or adapted to these rocky West Coast situations. And if it were, say, down in the south of England, the ones that would survive would be adapted to much drier climates and warmer climates. So they have a lot of capability to be adaptable to the local area and to the climate conditions, as long as those conditions stay fairly constant over time. Because obviously oak can live for a long time.
Now that we know that there's a lot more complexity in oak than we thought, what would be your top tips for establishing oak on your croft?
Oak needs fairly good soil, and it needs very low levels of browsing. It's quite susceptible to being eaten before anything else because it's quite tasty. At least the buds are quite tasty. So you need to have an area of fairly good ground, fairly deep soil. I mean, it can compete with grass. So oak is quite competitive against grass compared to some other trees. But it needs a lot of light, so it can't be growing in the shade of other trees. And the main problem with it growing in the shade of other oak trees is that you get the predators off the oak. So the things that eat oak leaves drop out of the canopy and eat any seedlings if it's under the canopy. So it needs to be a fairly open area. And if it isn't open, then you also kind of get problems with mildews developing on the oak, like oak mildew. So it needs a lot of air circulation to be able to make maximum advantage of the conditions.
If you already had an area where oak was growing on your croft, how should you manage it?
If you've already got oak, then you're in quite a good position because oak is a really good tree to have. It's good shelter. But it also means that you can't really grow other oak trees under that area. So you might be able to grow things like hazel under the oak canopy. But if you want to get more oak, you need to look at other areas. So outside of the existing oak woodland, because it's so long-lived, it can be grazed for a long time without really very many negative impacts on the woodland. So you could have 100 years where there's no regeneration in the woodland, and that's not going to be a problem, because as long as there's an area nearby where oak can grow, it can be seeding into that area.
People are moving more towards thinking about agroforestry, and if you're in an area where oak do well, then oak is definitely a useful tree when thinking about agroforestry, having grazing and trees integrated.
Oak is the classic agroforestry tree. I mean, it's been used in agroforestry for thousands of years. I mean, all these oakwood pastures are traditional agroforestry, and you've got some of these pastures are like maybe 800 years old hunting forests that have been specifically managed to have a combination of trees and grassland, really. So they're kind of a savanna where you have deer wandering under big open grown trees. And we can emulate that on any scale to bring in kind of higher canopies of oak and less grassland, perhaps a shrub understory as well. They're all different types of the same model, a high canopy forest with a grazable underlayer.
And leading on to that, is oak ever poisonous to livestock?
So oak has got a very high content of tannins in the leaves and in the bark, which means that if livestock eat a lot of it, yeah, they can suffer from poison of tannins, and acorns as well. They've got a lot of high tannin content. So these things are edible to a degree. I mean, you know, the cows love eating young oak leaves, but they're not the type of tree that you can use as leaf fodder, like, say, ash or birch even, because the leaves are not that edible. The exception is with pigs. Pigs can tolerate enough tannin that they could feed exclusively on acorns, say, for the autumn, which is the traditional pannage using acorns. For most of our livestock, they're not as usable in terms of fodder as other trees.
And when the acorns come, is that a masture of acorns? Do you need to remove stock in those times if there's a lot of acorns coming? I mean, like ruminants, like sheep and cows, if there's a lot of acorns appearing in the pasture?
I've never heard of it being such a problem that you'd have to remove the livestock. There's so many other things that eat acorns, you know, the pigeons and the crows and the jays and the deer all of them go into a woodland straight away and eat the acorns, and acorns germinate very quickly. So within a couple of months, there'll be oak seedlings.
Are there any pests or diseases that we should be concerned about or plan for?
Oak is very tolerant of a lot of different pests and diseases. So these galls that you find in oak, there's things like oak apples and spangle galls, and all of these are adaptations of the oak to pests that are feeding on the oak. So basically the oak is creating conditions to kind of to steal off the herbivore, the little pest or whatever it is. And that means that the pest doesn't spread as widely and it doesn't eat all of the oak. And in fact, it increases the amount of biomass in the oak tree. So what we would be worried about are if there are new pests coming in or new diseases coming in like we have with ash. There's some potential threats, but are not as serious as with some of the other species. And I think that's maybe because oak is very well able to cope with a whole range of different pests and diseases, because there's a lot of different species of oak as well. And because of this hybridization between them, I mean, there's a lot of genetic variation within oak. So some of the threats that we have are kind of combinations of different things. So when there's a high impact on the root system, combined with drought, combined with climatic effects like nitrogen in the air, nitrates, that can have a bad effect on oak. And this is where we get things like sudden oak decline. And I think it's all a combination of effects leading to the symptom that basically is oak trees dying. In the west of Scotland and the crofting counties, what we see is kind of oaks reaching about 200 years and then they start to die back. And that's generally to do with kind of the oak gets to a certain mass and it starts pressing down into the ground. And because we have so much wet ground in the West Highlands, it's basically the trunk of the tree is pressing the roots lower under the ground into the peat. I think that's what kind of starts to cause them to decline at about that age. So we do see areas of oak woodland where there's a lot of dead or dying oaks in them. Quite often in one area, the whole area will start to be dying. And then we see pests like, well, it could be pest species, but they're just basically species that take advantage of that situation, like honey fungus. They're not actually killing the trees, I think, but they're moving into these areas when there's a weakened population of oak.
In your work, have people mentioned any local lore about oak?
We don't have that much recent lore. It's really striking that in most crofting areas where there's oak, you'll find there's more than one generation of oak tree. So near most crofting settlements, there'll be a few old oak trees that were managed for timber, mostly for crooks, for the old black houses. And I think most crofting settlements had a source of timber, which would be an oak stand. Maybe it's only two or three trees, but they'd coppice these trees on, say, a 30-year cycle and use the branches at that size, which are manageable and not too huge to be able to move. And they'd use those for the crooks. There's a working history of oak in most of the crofting counties, and there's a longer history of more pagan associations with the Druids, whereby oak was the tree of the Druids and a portal to other worlds, really. That culture and lore is not as familiar to us now as it was a few hundred years ago.
You mentioned how oak was used in the past as for timber. What uses can oak be put to?
Oak is probably the most useful tree you could have, maybe with the exception of ash, because the heartwood of oak is so strong and so durable. That also means it's quite hard to work. It's hard to cut. It's hardwood, but it's very durable. Things like shipbuilding, house building, bridge building, all of those things have used oak in the past. The trouble in Scotland is that we don't have many straight oaks. They're mostly a bit crooked and they have a lot of knots in them. So to work with them is not that easy. And that's mainly because we haven't managed oak woodland for, say, 200 or 300 years. We haven't managed woodland for timber. But oak can be managed for timber. It's a bit of a challenge when that management has to take place over a couple of hundred years. So if we were looking at growing commercial oak for timber, we'd probably have to plan a 100-year cycle rather than with most of the commercial conifers that we use, which is a 40 to 50-year cycle. And that difference is double the length of time to get any usable product out of it. And it's more than a human lifetime. which again makes it a challenge, because with a commercial conifer, it's kind of almost a human lifetime that you plant it when you're a young man and you harvest it as an old man. But with oak, you're looking at multiple generations. So your grandfather would have to plant it, and then it's a different kettle of fish, really.
And what kind of things do you need to do to keep them growing straight? Is it a case of keeping the spacing right, or?
So yeah, you need to intervene. It's proper silviculture. So from the time that the young oaks would be planted, you'd need to mix them in with other trees and then gradually thin out the other trees around them. So you're drawing up a straight trunk. So you firstly need to have the right location, which is not too windy. And then you need to be able to intervene probably at least every 3 to 5 years to thin out the trees around the oak, give it a bit more space, and then start to select the oaks that are growing best. And then you can end up with a single tree that's worth a few thousand pounds rather than it being, you know, worth £50. So that the work that goes in over time is what delivers the outcome of straight timber. It's a lot of work to get that. That's the only way in the UK anyway to get straight timber would be to do a lot of that intervening. On the continent, I think there's probably a few places where that happens a bit more naturally, but even then there's people managing the woodlands, they're taking out trees that are not straight, and they're managing the woodland to become something that they can't actually see themselves, but will be happening in a few decades time.
So we really need good succession planning in the oak forestry world.
It's not usually a written down plan. It's an understanding of how the next generation are likely to take on what they've been bequeathed to them.
And if people have been inspired hearing all this information about oaks, what advice on grants would you give in relation to getting oak established on your croft?
Oak can be planted as part of a native woodland mix through the Forest Grant Scheme. Obviously, there's a limit on the proportion of your planting that can be one species. So you could have up to half of it being oak. But the best way to manage for timber would be to plant a combination of oak and birch, because they grow fast together and they grow about the same speed. There's the Forest Grant Scheme to do that. I think if you wanted to get into more advanced techniques for oak silviculture, there may be ways to look at support from the people like Royal Scottish Forestry Society. And it's mainly, I don't think you'd be getting money, but you'd be getting advice and experience from other people. And that would help anybody who really wants to grow oak for timber, which could be a profitable long-term enterprise.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today and for sharing so many insights about oak. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this special Spotlight mini-series episode on Trees of the Gaelic World. A special thanks to Jeanette Sutherland for the concept, research and the interviews. Thanks to Dr. Michael Newton for his lore and language insight. And a thanks to our team of advisors from the Woodland Trust for their insights and advice. You can listen to all 4 episodes in the mini-series now. Just look for the Rural Roundup on your preferred podcast player and look for the Spotlight Gaelic Trees.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.